Well, next up is Karine. I hope I said that right. Who's Karazanka from Brazil as well. Karine, are you there?
Oh, wow.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I'm a little nervous.
Oh, that's all right.
Mark,
so am I.
You have told me on Twitter that you love South America.
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with the work of any Latin American filmmakers?
Not very many. You know, I lived there for a little while. I lived in Colombia for a little while. I lived in Bogota. And I had a dog, a beautiful boxer for 12 years that was born in Bogota that I brought back, named Dulce. My father lived there for a long time. He lived in Bolivia for even longer, in La Paz or Santa Cruz for a while. So I'm very familiar with that terrain and that whole area. But no, I'm not that familiar with too many South American filmmakers.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that
Thank
it?
You. Is that that's
we
it?
Probably
shy?
Marked everything off everybody's list pretty much.
Well, I have a question for our music composer here.
Yes.
Kubi. Kubi?
Yes, Kubi.
Oh, right, good. I want you to please tell us all about yourself and the first song you ever composed and what age you were. And I know you're based in Los Angeles, and after the interview we'll give your websites, your Twitters, your Facebooks. But could you tell us when you first got interested in music, how old were you when you decided music was what I want to spend my life on?
I was actually 8. I wrote a piece for my... I guess it must have been second grade, the first communion class. And that was my first piece, and I've been writing ever since. But I actually still remember it. I have it written down somewhere.
And how many songs have you written to this point? Do you know? Have
oh
you kept
God.
A count?
Well, it's everything from songs or short instrumental pieces for films to 30-minute cantatas with orchestra and everything in between. So, but no, I've never counted, and I kind of like as soon as something's finished, I love everything I've done, but I'm mostly interested in what I'm going to do next.
Now, I know you play a lot of instruments, and you've also made instruments. Can you tell us what you play now, and do you sing as well, and were you in any, like, school choirs or bands when you were growing up?
I was a fanatical choir singer. I it's one of the things I really enjoyed all the way until I actually continued in my high school choir until I was 22. It was a very good choir. It was a music-focused high school in Munich where I grew up in Germany, and the choir would tour all of Europe. So after I graduated from high school, I actually stayed on for another couple of years until I moved to Cologne to study because it was a very good choir. And I, to me, it's the secret of a musician is if they have sung in ensembles, that it's the single best school for music making because there's no aids, there's no nets, there is no safety, there's nothing. It's you and your voice, and you have to work with everybody around you. So I love singing. I forgot the rest of the question.
Well, I wanted to know where about yourself. You were born and raised in Germany, correct?
Yes. Yes.
And
yes,
then and now then, you live in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And
I came here actually to go to school at CalArts. We, Mike and Mark and I were at CalArts around the same time, but didn't really know each other.
Wow.
We have
and
a few
that's,
friends
that's
in common, but we really—I don't think we ever really talked directly. I do remember their graduation. Mike and Mark rode up when the name was called. They rode up with a mariachi band and 4 real horses in full gallop to pick up the diploma. So,
wow!
Well, and you—this isn't your first film with Mark and Mike. You did. Was it? Stay cool.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
this was your second one. So,
yes.
Mark, you must have just remembered how good his music is and said, "Come on over to Flo." Right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Kubi and why I, you know, he never gives up. He's a tremendous worker, and I mean, I don't know how many times we've exchanged emails from 2 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the morning, exchanging notes and him sending me pieces. Do you like this? He understands all my referencing. We come from the same musical background. We both adore George Michael, and I think that's where our love affair started. And so there's
can't wait till Ashley hears that.
You know, there's a connection there between me and Kubi that we won't give up until we get exactly what we feel is correct. And we did it with Stay Cool. And on this particular film, I mean, he hit a home run. I listened to this score, and if it wasn't even my movie, it's so emotional and so well done that, you know, I'll play it in my house or I'll play it around at a party or something. People just love it for its own. And that's a great mark of a piece, is that you don't need picture to it and you understand the feeling. And I believe that this score really, really achieved it. I mean, I'm in love with this score. So.
Now, Kubi, what do you play instrument-wise? I know you make instruments. You've made instruments out of interesting tools, but what do you play?
Well, I'm the longest I play the piano, but I'm really not very good at it. If I consider how long I've played it, it's sort of my tool. It's my typewriter. My biggest love is still the bass guitar, but I played also trombone. I got quite serious with that. That I kind of stopped because it's too demanding an instrument. If you don't do it every day, you kind of lose your chops completely, and I just don't have the time to put into it. And I play a lot of percussion and guitar, so I find, because the way I work is almost like sculpting. I'm not so much of a writer that sits down, figures everything out to the nth degree, and then has people execute it. I'm much more... I start that way, and then I put it together and record it, and then I'll change it. And so it becomes much more sculpting in sound rather than writing a script in sound. And so it becomes actually easier for me to just play as much as possible myself. And then when I bring in musicians like Dan Rosenboom, who played the trumpet on the score and is, of course, one of the most important parts in the score.
Beautiful.
Then they kind of come in and do their own sculpting. They get the notes written down, but, you know, it's like with a singer. If you know, Joe Blow sings Georgia on My Mind, it's a beautiful song, and if Ray Charles sings it, so that's kind of what happens then when somebody like Dan or Lily Hayden, who played the violin on the end title, comes in. That one just blew my mind.
Well, for somebody who's never heard your music before, how would you describe your music to somebody who's never heard it? How would you describe it?
You know, that's the bane of my existence, because I kind of have to do that quite regularly, and I find it really, really difficult.
Oh.
I always wanted to be expressive. That's really my main goal, is I want it to not just be decorative. So, and sonically, I always try and use sounds that are not expected. So even if I'll have a trumpet and a piano, I'll either process the recording a little bit or add a torn paper or something in there, a little bit of texture that takes it out of the ordinary. And so it's really hard to talk about music in any intelligent way, but make it feel right. You know, that's really the thing. Is the biggest problem with music today, I think, is that we have so much of it available at all time, and which is beautiful. I mean, I'm actually not complaining about that. I love it. But the problem with that is that everything becomes cliched very quickly, and it becomes a postcard from an emotion. You know, like, here's a sad oboe line, because that's what it becomes a standing expression rather than a new expression. And I find that timbre is one way where you can take something and give it just enough twist so that it becomes new again. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So how long does it take you usually to write a song? Hours, days, weeks, months? Because some people, you know, it can take a year just to get the song just right.
Yeah, and, you know, thank God for deadlines, because otherwise it really is. I mean, one of the reasons I like to work in film is you're not on your own. And you're part of a bigger ensemble, so to speak. And so... I don't have to make all the decisions. In fact, I don't even make this decision to start. The film makes that for me, you know. So, and then between that and the practical considerations, that kind of takes care of the timeline for you. But it really, some things happen in 5 minutes, and other things, I have a few pieces that are still not finished that I started 15 years ago.
I really
come
like
back to them.
You don't
really
have a beginning
like,
and an end, but a middle.
Yeah.
I really liked reading that article where one of the songs is very personal to you. It was your own personal song for your wife, I believe, right?
Yes, and in fact, that is the theme for the entire film. Every single piece of music you hear is based on that melody. And it was when we were starting work together, Mark and Mike and I kept writing these sketches. And Mike and Mark came back and said, basically said, you know, it's good, but we're not feeling the depth. It doesn't mean enough yet. And I was getting ready to sit down and write number four. And then one of the things I do is I write everything down that I ever write. I have endless amounts of handwritten sketches. And so I went through them because I thought, you know, I wanted to get some inspiration, wanted to sort of kick loose the gears because I had done three and they weren't quite there. And I found this melody and that I wrote that melody a week before I proposed to my wife. And we've been married for 15 years now.
Perfect.
And I knew I was going to propose to her when I wrote that melody. So, so I used that, and it literally within 15 minutes, I got emails back from Mike and Mark, and this is it, don't touch it.
Well,
and
how
that became the theme in every single piece of music in the film, with the exception of the Zombies Live Here scene.
The Zombies.
That's the melody.
How many songs did you write total in Flow?
There's about... 25 pieces of music altogether. Many of them are pretty short. I think it's about 20 altogether. Actually, I have to look it up. I don't know. But the long ones are the ones that are on the soundtrack album. The rest are like 20-second type transitions and stuff.
Hey, Pam, before I get to Barbara in Washington State and Chelsea in Virginia, a couple people on Twitter were asking some really good questions. One of them was kind of funny. It was from Little Mom 1129. She says, for lovers only, when you're getting ready to shoot the dead bird, a guy rides by on a bicycle and does a double take. Was that scripted, or was his reaction just as priceless?
Yeah. No, it's not scripted at all. That was actually I landed that night. That morning we got up and I dressed as Eve and we were going to, Mike says, we're going to walk the streets, you're going to get into the character, walk the streets, take photos, and I'm going to start filming you. Just be Eve, you know, do what he does. He's a wanderer in the street, he's going to wander around and you just take photos of what you want. And you know, in the script it was a different, it was actually a butterfly laying on the ground. Actually it was two butterflies doing their business. And we'd actually started to order them to come to the thing. And I saw this pigeon, it just been hit prior to walking across the road. And so I saw and just said, this is Eve's state of mind. This is where he's at. He doesn't shoot anything that represents, I mean, that shoot, you know, he says it later, that pumps blood, that has eyeballs, all that kind of stuff. So I just jumped down in the middle of the street and started shooting with that Leica, and Mike started filming it. And so, I mean, I literally stopped traffic in the middle of Paris. Cars are screeching, people going by, you know. So, you know,
let's run the guy over too.
Yeah, between you know, me laying in the middle of the street and Mike was, you know, 50 cars backed up. So, yeah, so.
Well, Barbara, are you still there hanging on?
Oh, I still am, yes.
Okay, did you still have a question? I know you were on, you've been on for quite a while. Did you still have a question for Mark or Kubi?
I do. Many of the questions I had have been answered, so I appreciate that. I do want to thank Pam and Cheryl for hosting Stana Talk Radio. I really enjoy it a lot.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
And, where are you from?
And, Washington State. The,
oh, that's right, Washington.
Yeah, we're near Seattle. It's a small little town called Seebeck. We're on the water, and It's a beautiful place. If you want to film up here, this is a great place to film, let me tell you.
I lived in Issaquah Falls.
Oh, yeah.
I lived in Issaquah for a while.
Yeah. Well, and thank you, Mark, for taking the time to talk to us. I appreciate that. I want to say that I've watched the film 3 times, and I get something different out of it every time I watch it. And it was very interesting because what brought me to the film was, of course, Stana, because I am a huge fan of hers. I'm a Stanatic, you know. And, she brought me to the film. And I started watching it, and I wasn't sure what to make of it at the very beginning, the shooting of in the plane and all that, and then you get to the bird, and I was like, what the heck kind of a movie is this, you know?
It is, yeah.
And
yeah.
I wasn't really sure about it, but I stuck with it, and I have to say that it is such a beautiful piece. I'm mirroring what everybody else has said, but it was so intimate that I felt like a voyeur, you know. I felt like I was spying on these people that I couldn't be, you know.
In bed with them.
It was that intimate, you know. I love the where you filmed it. I'm very familiar with that part of France, and it brought back a lot of memories, and I thought it was beautifully filmed, even down to the tear, when you got that close-up on Stella's eye and that tear that came down. It was beautiful, just beautiful. And I don't want to ramble, but one other thing I want to ask is, you know, I go on these blogs and I go online, and there's sometimes a discussion about Stana's acting style, and some people don't care for it, and there's a whole lot of fans out there that do. And what I like about it is that it's very natural and very understated, and I thought she was beautiful for this movie. So thank you for waiting for her. I appreciate that. You did answer some questions about her that I had, so I'll just keep going and say one question I had. I don't understand the movie business, so please, I hope this isn't a rude question to ask, but why wasn't it released in the theaters? And is there any plan to have it? Is it just a distributor problem, or what is it?
No. Okay, this is a many, many, many different questions of why we chose to do what we did with this particular film. There is going to be a theater release, so I'll answer that quick.
When it is?
Yeah, it's going to be in the fall. We're going to
Are you cutting out, Mark?
Can you hear me good?
Yeah, better now. I hear beeping, so I thought your phone was going dead.
And so we're going to do that. What we did when we showed the film a few times, and what we felt that we really felt that it was such an intimate movie, which you've also stated and everybody stated, is that we felt that if we did do a release, let me back up. We had offers from many distributors, but what they wanted, we weren't going to give them. They wanted a color version as well.
Oh.
They wanted a color version to go along with it, and that means that at any time they can release that color version in any territory, and that's something that we couldn't get out of the contracts. So that was one reason why we didn't go with a big distributor. The second reason was we wanted to be able to connect on an intimate level with an audience first through on-demand, iTunes, build that, and then do it backwards. We felt the movie could survive from going ground up rather than releasing it on the top, and all you have to do is from there is fall down. We didn't think it was going to be able to survive a proper release. Yet critically, there wasn't going to ever be enough money to sustain bad reviews, so we didn't even allow that to happen.
Yeah.
What we did was, and what we've found out is really positive, is that the people who have come to it and like it have really, really propelled it. We were number one on iTunes. All that type of stuff is really worked to the benefit, and we allowed the intimacy between the audience and the film to really, really work. And that was a real conscious effort on Mike and I's part to connect with the audience before anybody could get involved and fracture that between critiques or articles. We've refrained from doing any interviews. We did one interview that's going to probably break tomorrow that's quite big. And then after that, I think we're going to start doing the normal press. But what we want to do is connect with the choir audience first, and we think we've
achieved that.
That
was very smart. That was good, yeah. Now, so you said that you pretty much stayed to the script, so there was
yes.
Were there any spontaneous moments that you can think of that?
Somebody asked on Twitter the other day, and I didn't answer because I knew I'd be on the phone. It's just too 140 characters just doesn't do it justice sometimes. Was that the makeup scene where she put makeup on was not in the script? Where she put makeup on me? That scene, there was a scene that bridged the dance scene with the Jeff Buckley song, but it wasn't that particular scene. Mike was watching us in the way we were, and he said, hey, that would be really great if she just put makeup on you. It would show this real femininity to Eve and the way you guys are and just the connectiveness that you're becoming really one, that you're really one person. So that was put in. That wasn't in the script.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Brenda, for calling
Barbara.
In. Barbara, sorry.
Thank you for taking my call.
Now, Mark, I just wanted to ask you real quick before any more calls, because we're getting close to the end of the show. What do you have going on besides Flow right now? Any projects you want to promote? Any charities to your heart? And same for anything?
No, nothing I can speak of right now. We have a project at Warner Brothers. We have a project at Sony, and as soon as those get the green light, I'll definitely tweet them and tell them what it is. You know, if you start talking before soon, and then people, what happened to
right.
that? What are you doing with that? So we don't. Until we
now,
know
what
that.
About for Flow? I mean, for Big Sur, do you have any involvement in that, or is that Michael's project?
It's Michael's project. I have a small part in it. It was in our company. There's certain projects that come, and that particular project came. I was already on a project at Sony, and I couldn't. They wouldn't release me from the contract. So I had to stick with them, and as Prohibition, that's probably going to be our next picture, and that allowed Mike to do, it's our same company, it's just he headed it, produced it, and adapted it.
Okay.
But that should, I would think that it would premiere in Sundance.
All right,
that would
that's a good thing.
The end game. Yeah.
Now, Kubi?
Yeah.
I just want to get these in, Cheryl. I know you got callers, but I want to get this in for them because they. Now, do you have anything you would like to promote? Anything you're working on? Anything coming up for you? Any charities close to your heart?
No, actually, there's a lot of things, but again, just like Mark, there is a few things going on that I don't want to talk about before they're cooked.
Okay, then Cheryl. I just wanted to ask you one thing, Kubi. Very important question. Do you sing songs in the shower? Do you compose your music in the shower? Somebody asked that.
My music in the shower. I'm sorry, I kind of don't get it.
No, they wanted to know.
Sing in the shower.
Oh.
Somebody asked us that.
I sing all the time, actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was rather cute, someone asked.
Okay, Chelsea in Virginia, you still there? Did you have a quick question
Hi.
For either gentleman? Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a question for Mark.
Okay.
I just want to say, first of all, congratulations on the film's success. You really deserve it. You're really talented. I just wanted to know, the scene when Yeez and Sophia are looking for the hotel room and you're knocking on doors, was that scripted?
Yeah.
Were those actors, or was that?
No, they're not actors. The one that's, I'll give you a little movie magic, the one, the first door, no one exists. That's just sound. That's just an added sound of a guy. That guy doesn't exist. The guy that has the kind of the belly, the beer belly, that's one of the producers in France. And we made him do that. His name is actually credited. It's Angus McDonald. And pretty much everybody you see besides my agent or Eve's agent and her driver, those are two professional actors, is everybody that was kind of hanging around at the time. The girl who delivers the dress to me was a production assistant. The person that Sophia is interviewing is a real big director in Paris. Who else? Oh, the guy that plays my best friend is really, really big. And a lot of people don't know who he is. He's like the Banksy of France, and I'm sure not to say it that way, but he is a real big graffiti artist, really, really well-known, Andre Baron.
Was that the guy reading the map to you?
Yes, yes. He actually owned the hotel that we were shooting in, and he was very, very helpful in getting us a lot of the things that we wanted to use and shoot. He was actually in the Banksy movie, The Exit Through the Gift Shop. That did really, really well. But none of them were actors. None of them were actors, besides the driver and my agent.
How about the guy, the waiter?
And the voices
no,
on the phone?
No. The editor is the voice. It's Gary. He's the editor of the movie. My wife on the phone is Tara Subkoff, who's a well-known actress. Yeah. So they just came in and did things, and we kind of put it together.
Well, thank you, Chelsea.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling
thank
in from
Chelsea.
Virginia.
Thank you.
Sorry, I accidentally cut her
That's
off.
That's okay. We're down to the last 10, 15 minutes.
I have Kelly from St. Louis, Missouri. Kelly.
I'm here.
Hey, Kelly.
You hear me?
Yes.
Hear me?
You're on.
Okay. Mark, my question for you is the type of camera that you guys used for the film.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the Canon. Go ahead.
So it was a SLR single lens reflex camera that you actually used to film the entire movie.
Yes, we did. We did it on the SRL. It was the D5 or 5D. I always get confused. The Mark II. Yeah, it was a Canon.
Oh wow!
And it has a video component on it. It's on my. I've tweeted it a few times. It's also on the site. There's a couple of pictures of Mike filming with it. We shot the whole film on that camera.
Oh, cool. And then what was the program that you used to cut the movie?
Final Cut Pro.
Okay.
On our
and then for Kube, the mm-hmm. on the music, the main title that you did, it feels like did you do that as a like a waltz tempo? Because it kind of feels like a waltz tempo.
It's a 3/4, yeah. It is waltzish, definitely.
Waltzish, okay. And then I love the trumpet playing in the first kiss scene.
Thank you.
That it sounds. It sounds very can't describe it. It just has that ring to it that really sounds awesome.
Well, I was curious. Go ahead.
And I was curious at the end, and I just watched the movie for the first time today, tonight. You guys came on. So just before the ending, there's I was curious, was Stana actually singing near the end of the movie?
Go
ahead.
I'm blanking on the name of the band now. So you
the girl singing. That's
the girl singing.
Eddie.
It's a
Heartache. You know the song Heartache.
Yeah, girl called Eddie, right?
Yeah. She's a beautiful voice, beautiful lyrics. No, that's not Stana. Although Stana has an amazing voice, she did sing in a scene, but we didn't use it.
Okay, because it would have been it almost sounded like her voice, and I was like, it almost sounds like her.
Yeah, it does. It does. Very similar.
Well, thank you very much, Kelly.
All right.
Okay.
Have
take care.
All right. Bye.
Okay, next we have Brenda from Kansas City, Missouri. Brenda, go ahead and ask your question.
Okay, thanks, Cheryl. Hi, everybody. How are you doing?
Hi.
I just learned, Mark, are you by chance going to have any sequels to this? I love the movie.
You know, it's we've discussed it. Mike and I have discussed it. There is a storyline that we've explored that would go on. But, you know, like anything, it has to have a certain type of success for people to want it and to want to see that story continue. I would love to continue their story in a sense that to explore that situation and their relationship further. But we have ideas. I did write more to the screenplay that we didn't shoot, and we do have a lot more footage we didn't put in the movie that could work in a sequel as well. It's something we'd love to do, but you need a certain type of success to continue that story.
As I say, give it time. I don't think you'll have any problem with it.
I appreciate that. You know, I'd love that. I would love for it to, because we did it on this, I mean, this is beyond below grassroots, the way we released it, is that if it does get to get up into the consciousness of the world, that people really respond, that would be the most amazing thing for this film. And that's what we intended to start from nothing to see if we could get somewhere with it.
Yeah. Well, I think you guys did a great job, and thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you for the kind words.
Okay, and then next up we have Nargis from Washington, D.C. Are you there, Nargis?
Yes, I am. Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Mark.
Good evening.
Anna. Good evening, Kublai. First of all, I would like to congratulate everybody. I think we all owe you a big thank you for this magnificent movie. What I wanted to say is that I grew up in France, and once, you know, you walk those streets and, you know, all the sceneries, it just gives the movie a whole different level. Also, I've been for years trying to make my friends see it through a French movie, and I'm sure, Mark, you know where I'm headed with this, of course, the new wave.
Yes.
And would you please, and which actually I succeeded in finally last weekend, they sat through A Man and a Woman. They wasn't crazy about it. They were not crazy about it, but they watched it.
Yes.
Could you please tell the American audience, because as you know, the European audience is always,
yes,
you know, a little bit different.
Yes.
We have a different sense of eyes, if
yes,
I may
yes.
say. But I mean, the
yes.
whole, the French touch to it, the whole, there are details, and I'm amazed
mm-hmm.
you went and got those tiny little details, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, the cabinet, the love locks, is that it?
Mm-hmm.
I thought I recognized exactly the Le Pont des Arts, and
yes.
was you know, very, very beautifully done. Would you please tell us a little bit how the French New Wave influenced Flo? And thank you again.
Oh, it was a big, big influence. I mean, I saw that particular Man and a Woman, the Claude Lelouch film, when I was 17 or 18. I was very, very young. It was a huge impression on me, on the way a love story was being told. Up until that point, I'd never seen anything like it. So it really stuck with Mike and I. And we thought we were going to make it in our early 20s on 8mm film. But, you know, things changed, and we started developing other stories and stuff like that. What we tried to do is not, you know, although I've used the word homage to it, what we tried to do is not do a homage to it. We tried to do a French New Wave film. We really went in there with the mindset of how we would do this. We would record natural sound. We would do the things that we weren't concerned with American filmmaking or the things that we were taught. We pretty much abandoned every rule that we had learned and thought, okay, this is, the thing about the French New Wave and what we really respond to was the honesty that they shot their scenes with, and where they weren't concerned with the narrative push. They were concerned about the moments between people.
Right.
And those are the things that we really, really focused in on, was the state of being, or the way that people interact, or the way people respond with each other. And you know, the camera allowed us to really create an intimacy between us and the audience. And that's something that we really wanted to explore, was how do we shorten that line between the people watching it? And, you know, we heard a lot of the people say, hey, I feel like a voyeuristic film. And that was our purpose, was to, hey, we're going to let you in on something that you haven't seen. And hopefully that connects you and doesn't repel you. And a lot of the French New Wave had that as well. They were so honest in what they were trying to do. And that's what we weren't worried with a lot of the things that you would probably be worried when you're making a film here, or a film that would be distributed here, which is, does the first act end here? Does the second act end here? Do you feel the hero with his journeys doing? We can do all that stuff, and you can go see that stuff at any time you want at the multiplex. We weren't concerned with that at this particular film. Although we admire those films and we're a product of those films and we love those films, we didn't want to make that particular film with this story. And the French New Wave allowed us to understand how to do that.
Yeah. Anyway,
okay.
Thank you again so very much.
You're
to
welcome.
You, to Mike, and to Shtana and all the people involved. Thank you again.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Cheryl, we need to wrap up the show now. We have just went through 2 hours, you guys.
Oh, wow, that was fast.
We have one more.
Okay, well, we need to let them guys say goodbye, so can bring them on really fast,
okay,
and then we'll wrap it up.
This is Linda, who used to be in Las Vegas, who now lives in Montana. Linda, go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, Linda.
Hey, Mark, how are you doing? Good. Where are you at, Montana?
I'm in Missoula.
Oh, okay, nice. I'm in the Swan. I have a house in the Swan.
Oh, neat. Yeah, it's
yeah.
beautiful up here.
Yes.
Well, first I wanted to tell you that I obviously, like a lot of people, came to the movie because
yeah.
of Stana and being a fan of
yeah.
hers. And it's not typically a style movie that I would have given a chance previous.
Yeah.
And I'm
yeah.
happy to say that I've completely changed. It's a beautiful movie. I've watched it three times now, and I appreciate
wow.
now that I'll be able to be more open to other types of movies. And
oh,
I wanted
to
just touch briefly on where you had mentioned the infidelity and that people
mm-hmm.
having some problems with that.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
what I kind of got from it was that both characters at the beginning of the movie were really empty and kind of half
mm-hmm.
alive
yes.
to begin with, and their actual coming together and then through the movie having experienced that and them struggling
mm-hmm.
with that infidelity, that they seem like they were whole people again, able to bring
mm-hmm.
something new to those relationships that they had actually,
yes.
you know, because
wow.
they were separate from them anyhow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
yes.
and I'm kind of wondering if that was sort of the direction with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a huge subject, infidelity, and, you know, obviously in the last year and a half or whatever through the press, we've seen a lot of it. So I think a lot of people have a bad taste in their mouth. I tried to do it in the most tasteful way. I think with any story, it's not a story without conflict. You need some kind of conflict, and you need your characters to understand that personal conflict. I think, you know, the film tells me, when I hear people about that or have problems with infidelity, it tells me more about them more than it does about the infidelity. It's wrong, and that we've all made bad decisions, and, you know, Eve and her obviously made a mistake. But it's almost a way of understanding that mistake and understanding who they are at that point. And we're all human, and I think that's the point of the movie is understanding your decisions and where you were at the time you did it. And you'd hope that if you made that decision that you regret, that there's a way to maybe in a bad way put a bow on it and kind of understand that with that person, that you go, I'll always love you. It's okay that we're not together, but this is okay. What we did, but to understand the higher purpose of it as well. We know what we did. We know what we're doing. You know.
But it
almost
seems like they now can bring something new
yes.
to the or come back to their relationships.
Of course.
Yeah.
Again. Yeah. I think.
So.
Yes, I completely. You're right in that sense that they are better people for it. And in a weird way, they did an action that made them better. You know?
Right.
All right. Well, thank you, Linda, for calling in. I hate to cut you short, but we're down
to
5 minutes. And we need to wrap up and thank our guests and thank everybody out there for calling and listening to Stana Talk Radio. Cheryl, we may have to do another edition late tonight to get in all their websites and all their
pages.
No
worries about that. Yeah.
All that stuff, because we missed all that and our Stana News and everything else. So we'd love to say thank you, Mark, for all the time you've spent with the fans and Twitter and Kubi, and for coming on the show and 2 hours. I mean, it's way past our expectations.
Oh, no, thank you. We appreciate it. You know, I just want to say that the fans have been really, really great. They really supported the film, and they're a big reason why the success is the way it is. And, you know, I'll always be there for them. And hopefully, you know, the film does really well, and we all can have to share in the success of what turns out to be, you know, it's really connecting with people. And I speak for Kubi and Stana and Mike and even Sarah, that, you know, we did this movie, and we hope that everybody can see it, and it reaches as far as it can, you know.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, and we wish you much success with your movie and your music.
Thank you.
We'll see you on Twitter, I'm sure, and Facebook and everywhere else. And good night, everybody, from Stana Talk Radio. Cheryl.